Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC in convention mode for most of the show today. We have really interesting guests lined up, really interesting conversations from the Republican convention today. And as we saw from yesterday's show, who knows who may show up on Radio Row and join us as we go along. Now, one of Mitt Romney's top surrogates and one of the most combative is former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu. And he is our first guest from the Republican convention today. I'll ask him about jobs, energy, and whether there is racial code, in his opinion, in some of the Romney campaign language and in some of his own. Governor Sununu, thanks for coming on our program.
It's nice to let you, for you to let me join you. Hope your listeners out there are experiencing a little better weather than the poor Gulf is.
So first, what makes your state of New Hampshire such a swing state in such a deep blue region as the Northeast?
Well, it is interesting. We have Vermont in the west, Maine in the east, Massachusetts to the south, and Quebec to the north. We sort of are an island of sanity up there. But I think it's people really do believe in the state motto, live free or die. And people in New Hampshire are very much involved in the political side of things. There's a lot of self-governance. Our cities and towns are a very important part of the process. And we have people that work on boards of selectmen, school boards, and really do affect the pocketbook of themselves and their fellow citizens. So they're not just trivial jobs. And it is a process of self-governance. I like to say we tithe our time in politics in New Hampshire.
So this election, as you said, as you know, is about jobs more than anything and long-term growth versus long-term decline. So on jobs, the Democrats see Republicans as being for this utopian world where just by cutting government and cutting regulation, the market will grow jobs through the invisible hand. Is that the essence of the Romney jobs plan?
No, the essence of the Romney jobs plan is stop putting your foot on the neck of small businesses with taxes and overregulation, and don't expect the process to function without any taxes. You've got to have some, and don't expect the process to function without any regulation. You need some level, but this administration has gone so overboard that it has choked the job-making machine in America. And you talk to small businesses across this country, they're not hiring now because they're scared of Obamacare. They're not hiring now because they're afraid of the uncertainty on taxes. They're not hiring now. They would rather give somebody overtime than hire and have to be burdened by the overregulation that comes every time you hire a new person. That's the kind of climate we have now. This administration does not understand that government can suppress incentives, and they have suppressed incentives. Mitt Romney wants to bring those incentives back and move things forward, and understands that one of the costs of doing things in America, one of the things that is a restriction on your ability to hire people, is the cost of energy. We have more coal, and now with shale gas, more natural gas than anywhere else in the world. And this administration may use nice words, but they have been killing the coal industry. We're going to shut down dozens of coal plants this year because of an overactive EPA that is nitpicking on regulations. And we have inhibited the development of our shale gas. Mitt Romney understands that if we develop coal, oil, natural gas, we unleash the power of our energy resources, and we do encourage the alternatives as well, that we can be a North America that's energy independent and have cheap energy for our businesses.
The Obama people would say that there's more drilling taking place than at any time in many years with respect to oil, that they're letting fracking for natural gas go forward as is deemed environmentally safe, and that the oil market is global anyway, so that when Romney talks about being energy self-sufficient through the development of oil, there's really no such thing because it all goes into this global marketplace that we have to buy it back from.
It shows you what artists they are at lying with half-truths. Let's talk about the oil production. Oil production is up because it's taking place in places where the federal government couldn't stop it. On the areas where federal permitting is involved, it's been reduced to less than half of what it was when he came into office. Lie number one. Lie number two, the EPA has got its foot on the neck of the shale gas people and preventing them, using all kinds of excuses to prevent the growth of that to take place at the pace that it should to free things up. And number three, this is an administration that has killed coal. The president bragged about the fact that he was going to make it such that if you wanted to use coal, you'd go bankrupt, and his EPA has done that.
Do we want a coal future anymore? Do we want a maximal fossil fuel future? When Romney talked in his energy speech last week about defunding research for renewable energy, it makes it sound like he thinks that we can have an entirely fossil fuel future, and he never even mentioned global warming as a factor.
Well, the fact is that fossil fuels are the mainstay for at least the next generation and probably two. And if you are in fairyland and thinking it's otherwise, you don't understand technology. I'm an engineer. My PhD is mechanical engineering. I can tell the difference between the fairy tales of those who think alternative energies are around the corner. And this administration has spent $90 billion playing games with their cronies trying to move that legend forward. We are going to be dependent on coal, oil, and natural gas as a world for the next generation or so. The Chinese and the Asians understand that. It's about time that we start untying our arm from behind our back and start giving that asset to the American people so we can be competitive again.
My guest, former Governor John Sununu of New Hampshire. Republicans rail against redistribution of wealth, but we have a market-based redistribution of wealth in this country. The top 1% owns 40% of the wealth, when in, say, President Reagan's day, they used to own 25%. We could become a Latin American nation the way we're headed, the critics say. Are you concerned about this 30-year redistribution of wealth?
I'm concerned about the fact that one of the reasons some of that has happened is that this country has trended towards over-regulating the growth of new businesses. It's new businesses that move wealth from the top to the middle class. It's the small businesses of America owned by the middle class that allows the redistribution of wealth in the direction we want. And the more you choke that off, the more skewed that number goes. So with a president like Mitt Romney that understands that strength, I'm convinced you're going to see that number moving to a more equitable level.
So you think CEOs make so much more than their average employees today than they did when we were kids because of regulation rather than because of, let's say, deregulation of the banks?
It's not CEO salary that sets that percentage that you cited.
That's one step.
No, it's the most trivial stat. The bulk of that wealth at the top is made by capital gains, by people who have invested in businesses, by the people at Apple, by the people at Google, by the people at Oracle, and all the employees that are stockholders there. That wealth redistribution has occurred on the basis of stock ownership. And what we need to do is encourage that kind of stock ownership to the smaller businesses and encourage smaller businesses to have ownership in those assets and intellectual properties in America that allow more of a distribution of that wealth down into the middle class.
But if you're going to bring capital gains tax rates into it, then we know that Governor Romney only pays about 13% in taxes because he gets so much of his income from capital gains, compared to, say, vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan, who gets more of it in other ways, and he pays 20% of taxes, even though he makes much less money than Romney. Do we want to keep that capital gains advantage?
You know, inherent in the question you ask is the snide disdain that the president displays towards those who want to create a successful business and profit on the capital gain side and enjoy the fact that there is an incentive for them to do so with a low capital gains tax. It is unbelievable to me how inherently snide those comments are from people who want to suggest there's something wrong when people have that kind of success. There isn't something wrong. That is, in fact, the most important single ingredient to get America back on the right track. And there shouldn't be this level of envy to those who have been successful in that direction.
But if the people who are entrepreneurs were only required to pay the same rate of taxes, not a higher rate, but the same rate of taxes as people who go to work at jobs for the same income, would that provide such a disincentive to create new businesses?
Yeah, it would because investment carries a risk, and you have to encourage people to take that risk. Otherwise, they'll take the easy way out and just start earning a salary. You want them to take a risk of investing money, investing time, and in some cases, investing their lives and their careers to move things forward. Yes, when you have to compensate for a risk, you have to provide an extra incentive.
Let me ask you a question as a former governor about the Romney plan on Medicaid to end it as a federal-state partnership and turn it over to the states with a block grant that is less than Washington would give you under the current system. Does that make it harder on governors to balance your budgets and still serve the people of your state with their Medicaid needs?
If you're a governor with talent, you welcome that. It's the governors who are scared to death of having to make hard decisions that shy away from it. I would have loved to have to operate under that mode. I could then have delivered those services to my citizens in the most efficient way. I would have ended up giving more services for the amount of money we were spending.
Could you give me an example of how you could have done that more efficiently with less money
Sure.
and still serve people better?
Sure. Sure. Medicaid now almost prescribes all the level of services you have to provide across the board. And what I have to do in a cold weather state like New Hampshire may be very, very different than a hot weather state like Florida. The kinds of treatments that we provide in a medical-rich service environment like New England may be different than the kind of treatments and services we provide in a more rural area like Arkansas. And for them to optimize the delivery of services like that requires flexibility that doesn't exist today.
One more question. Your name comes up in my campaign Google searches a lot for having to apologize for saying President Obama needs to learn how to be an American. Taken together with the theme of Thursday night's convention, We Believe in America, does that suggest that you're arguing that the president doesn't believe in America?
Now, the context of that sentence was when I was talking about the incentives that create jobs in America, and I did use that sentence, and the Obama people tried to suggest that that sentence somehow was related to a revival of the birther issue. I certainly believe the president was born in this country, and so the reason I went and apologized for that phrase is I did not want to allow them to distort the reality of what was I was talking about, which was, in fact, the importance of creating incentives for the middle class to create, be part of the job-creating aspect of small business.
Then why We Believe in America? If it's not implying anything about Democrats, Mitt Romney has to convince voters that he believes in America?
No, what he has to convince voters is that this drift towards huge government, which is similar to European socialism, is the wrong direction to go. What he wants to remind us is that this is an America with private enterprise incentives that have been so much a part of our success. And when the president goes out and says, you didn't build it, the president is failing to understand what's important to get the things back on the right track. When the president goes out and talks in a snide way about the 1% or the 10% or the 20% and demeans success, Mitt Romney wants to say we want an America in which success is rewarded.
Former New Hampshire Governor John Sununu, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We recorded that John Sununu interview yesterday afternoon. Coming up next, from Tampa, Gwen Ifill of PBS with analysis of some of that conversation that we just had with John Sununu and preview of tonight's first speeches at the Republican convention. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and PBS anchor Gwen Ifill joins us now from Radio Row at the Republican Convention with some convention analysis. Hi, Gwen. I know you'll be on television all evening tonight, so thanks for doing a little radio here today. First, on that John Sununu interview that we just aired, we got into one of the main themes of this convention and the party platform, which is energy. And the platform, as I raised with Governor Sununu, says nothing about renewables at all or controlling climate change. In fact, it specifically rejects any regulation of greenhouse gases and defends against a war on coal, it says the EPA is waging. Is that the donors from the fossil fuel industry having their say, or does the party really think that that will make more swing voters vote for them?
Or maybe it's just what they believe, Brian. I've never been around a whole group of Republicans who spend a lot of time talking about renewable energy as one of their priorities. They are defenders of fossil fuels, and that's what they believe. It's not just always about people giving them money to say what they believe. It's kind of where it ends up. But people often take apart the party platforms and say, oh, my goodness, it turns out Republicans don't believe in abortion. Well, they don't. So that's what they ought to put in their platform. Actually, I see platforms as very interesting documents as a leaping off point for what their messages and themes are. And, you know, the candidates themselves have always historically kind of picked and chosen what they want to emphasize and what they want to de-emphasize. But the document tells you who the party is and what they believe, at least who the party activists are.
Well, you mentioned the abortion plank, and I want to talk about that and deconstruct a little bit of what Mitt Romney felt compelled to go on CBS last night and say. Of course, Todd Akin agreed to stay away from the convention, but I think the shadow of Todd Akin is in the hall. Otherwise, they wouldn't be talking about this at all. And I was struck by Romney going on CBS last night and uttering a slightly pro-choice 40 seconds. Listen.
No, my position has been clear throughout this campaign. I'm in favor of abortion being legal in the case of rape and incest and the health and life of the mother. But recognize, this is the decision that will be made by the Supreme Court. The Democrats try and make this a political issue every 4 years, but this is a matter in the courts. It's been settled for some time in the courts. I've come down on the side of life. I respect people who have a different point of view with regards to contraceptives. Of course, people have a right to use contraceptives, and the Democrats' effort to try and make that an issue is kind of silly. But this issue of life is an important one, and we have differing views on this, and people should consider them.
So Mitt Romney, in one 40-second answer that I actually think raises three separate issues. So, Gwen, I want to replay the three components of that answer and talk briefly with you about each one. Here's that first 10 seconds again.
No, my position has been clear throughout this campaign. I'm in favor of abortion being legal in the case of rape and incest and the health and life of the mother.
And what's new to me there, Gwen, is invoking the health of the mother, not just the life. You know, many Republicans who would accept a life of the mother exception to an abortion ban reject a health of the mother exception because they say doctors can use it as an elastic clause and justify an abortion based on any small medical condition as a loophole. You're familiar with that argument, right?
I am, and there are a lot of Republicans who do feel that way. The interesting thing to me in that little soundbite was listening to the very beginning of what he said, when he said, I have been clear throughout this campaign. I think he has been clear throughout the campaign on this particular point of view. What I think is interesting about Mitt Romney's abortion history is he has not been clear throughout his entire history, his governing history, and that what he is saying now in this campaign is not what he said when he was governor of Massachusetts and not what he said when he was running against Ted Kennedy for Senate. So that evolution to me not only speaks to the details of what he believes, but it also speaks to me about what he believe, how he forms his beliefs and how they evolve over time.
Here's the second part of that answer, and this really surprised me because he seems to accept Roe versus Wade as settled law.
But recognize, this is the decision that will be made by the Supreme Court. The Democrats try and make this a political issue every 4 years, but this is a matter in the courts. It's been settled for some time in the courts.
It's been settled for some time in the courts. I don't think Republican presidential candidates who call themselves pro-life talk like that very often.
I don't think John McCain called for Roe v. Wade to be overturned by the courts. Maybe I'm mistaken on that. I think what there's,
well, maybe it's one step more subtle than that. But because isn't one of his campaign promises to appoint conservative justices, which in general is taken to mean in part those who will vote to overturn Roe?
Well, and that would unsettle the court. But the court, it's settled for now with the court as it's composed. Obviously, any president who gets a chance to take over gets to shift where the court would go. That's what the current president has tried to do, is what every president tries to do. So I'm not as struck by that, because I believe that there are two ways of looking at this in the Republican Party. One is overturn Roe v. Wade, abortions should all be illegal. And the other is, this has been the more successful tactic, which is, let's take apart abortion bit by bit around the edges. Let's talk about exceptions. Let's talk about parental notification. Let's attack these issues which are more universally embraced, rather than try to do something which is undoable, which is overturn the entire act.
And part three of the answer on contraception.
With regards to contraceptives, of course people have a right to use contraceptives, and the Democrats' effort to try to make that an issue is kind of silly.
So he says raising contraception as an issue is silly, but the Republicans are making a big issue out of the free contraception coverage requirement for all employer health plans in Obamacare. So is it an issue or isn't it?
Well, the distinction that they're making is that they believe that the Affordable Health Care Act is forcing a conscience clause, forcing Catholic hospitals, say, or Catholic universities to violate their own conscience by having to provide contraceptives when they do not believe that people should use contraceptives. That's that argument. It's about morality and conscience, not about whether contraceptives themselves are something that people should use. And if you listen to what Romney just said, he was talking in a broad sense about, of course, contraception should be legal. But he wasn't responding at all to the smaller point, the narrower point that you just raised.
The actual policy point that's in play, and that's even the subject of a lawsuit that Cardinal Dolan, who they chose to do the benediction after Romney speaks on Thursday night, is suing as part of the Catholic Bishops Group, the federal government, over this contraception issue. So it certainly is an issue. I guess
subtlety is really the key with all of the things you're mentioning here. It is not in the interest of any presidential candidate to go and throw bombs during the week of their convention. They're trying to get more people, not fewer people, to embrace them, to think that they're like them, to say and to energize their base without alienating their base. So that's what that's the thing that ties all of this together. Yep. In the way you hear candidates talk.
PBS's Gwen Ifill from the NewsHour, my guest on WNYC. She'll be on television a lot tonight and tomorrow and Thursday night with convention coverage, Channel 13 and I guess 21 locally also, I'm not sure. And folks, if you want to see Gwen, we just tweeted a picture of her at the WNYC booth on Radio Row. So check out Twitter at Brian Laird, see a picture of Gwen Ifill and her awesome green jacket.
I wish I was smiling. Gosh, I wish I'd known.
And I guess standing back from it all, what's remarkable in the conversation we were just having is that here we are at Republican convention time, and in the shadow of Todd Akin and by extension of Paul Ryan, who also believes in no exceptions even for rape, that this has all brought a new intensity around the gender issues to this convention that they were hoping to avoid, yes?
Oh, yes. I was talking to Kathy McMorris Rogers last night, who's a congresswoman from Washington State. She's the highest-ranking woman in the Congress, which is Republican woman, which is kind of remarkable when you think about it. But she has been named the convention host, which means every night she says hello and welcome, partly because her speech got canceled thanks to Isaac. But the interesting thing about her, she is in the position, as are all Republican women, of explaining why they're not anti-women. They and she were saying that Todd Akin is a huge distraction, that he shouldn't have come. Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, revoked his credentials, told him not to come to Tampa. But what's interesting about that is I said to her, so, but do you agree with him on abortion? Why would you try to force him out of the race? And she just said what he said was inappropriate. So they're unhappy with anyone who creates a huge distraction, speaks to a gender gap, which indisputably exists between the president and Governor Romney. And they're trying as much as possible to stay on point on the issues they think are good, as opposed to the ones which are distracting, especially for undecided or independent voters.
Listeners, you can join the conversation with Gwen Ifill, 212-433 WNYC, Democrats, Republicans, Independents. You're all welcome in, 212-433-9692. Later in the show, by the way, with people seeming to come at Mitt Romney from all sides, from his right, from his left, from the Ron Paul supporters, we're going to have a call-in for Romney supporters, per se, on what you want to hear from this convention. So that's coming up later. Right now, anybody on the John Sununu interview that we just heard, on any of the things that we're talking about with Gwen Ifill, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Gwen, at the end of the interview with Sununu, I raised Romney's birther joke and Sununu himself apologizing for his statement that Obama still needs to learn how to be an American. And the theme of Thursday night's convention events, which is We Believe in America, which I said suggests that the president doesn't believe in America, according to them. Sununu rejected, of course, any idea that it's intended to suggest something racial or something foreign about President Obama or something unpatriotic. How do you see this whole thread? Is it code to a certain kind of white people with enough deniability in the language, or what do you make of it?
Well, you know, I try to stay out of the business of guessing people's intent or pointing the finger at them. But I do know one thing in my years of covering politics, and that everybody who wants to get elected to anything has one goal. And that is to paint themselves as someone who is closer to who you are, whatever that is, and that the other person is the evil other who will do you wrong. That means that if you are President Obama, you are going to say that Mitt Romney doesn't get you, that he is alien to you, that he is foreign to your interests. And if you are Mitt Romney, you may have to find ways to raise those questions. I mean, the one interesting thing about the Bertha joke, which did not go over well. It did in that crowd, but it did not go over well outside of that crowd, is that it was delivered by someone who sounded like he had told the joke before. It wasn't something that was off the cuff. It was something he thought, I think genuinely thought, was funny. But he also knew, because he's a very smart politician, that it continues to keep the question open for people. A lot of people who just heard, whether it's they may even believe he was born here. They just think there's something different about him or alien about him. And that's something which they want to keep alive, just this discomfort with him. Keep in mind that every poll shows that Mitt Romney seems to be losing the likability contest. His goal here is to tell people, I am like you. I do get you. And the flip side of that is always to say that the other guy doesn't get you and he's not like you. Now, the reason why we always go for racial code when the criticism is directed at the president is because of his history-making status. But I think that we have to... Maybe that's what he meant, but I think I would rather sit back and think it's part of that larger brush of trying to paint the other as something you do not want and is alien to you, and that because the person you're painting is black, we're going to see race.
Well, maybe it says something about how far we've come in this country that the person who is, to many Americans, somehow exotic, if that's the word, is the one who's seen as more likable and more in touch with them than the traditional white guy.
It depends whether you consider Mormonism to be exotic or not, because a lot of people do. So that could be presented its own problem.
That's a whole other question. John in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hello, John.
Yes, hello. Let me lower my radio. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Brian, you were having a lengthy discussion there about Romney's interview where he was almost sounding pretty reasonable on the abortion and contraception and Roe v. Wade being settled law and so forth and so on. What I didn't hear is what I think is that, you know, this is an interview he's doing at a time of heightened media attention. And, you know, it's probably not true. I think we should consider the fact that he's saying things that are not true. I don't think it will come as a surprise to you and your guests that politicians often say things that are not true. And he's just trying to make himself sound more reasonable, but it isn't really what he truly believes. And it's certainly, definitely not what the Republican Party believes. It's contrary to the last 15, 20 years of old Republican Party focus and emphasis.
Well, there are...
So it's not true. Let's talk about, let's consider the possibility that he's just lying.
Well, he certainly has changed his position a lot, as Gwen has pointed out. So it's hard to take him too seriously on any position that he takes, that he stakes out on abortion, because he may change it tomorrow as the political winds shift. My larger point was that he was threading the needle so finely that he was evading Scott Pelley's question by answering questions that didn't really – by answering the question in a way that didn't really answer the question. And, Gwen, I guess your point was he's changed so many times on abortion depending on what he's running for that we really don't know what he's going to be in office with respect to this issue.
Well, I didn't say that, but what I do – what a point I would make is that it is a time-honored practice of politicians to try to answer a question that they don't like by talking about something else. I say, Mr. Candidate, the sky is blue. And he goes, you know, I noticed the sea is green. He will always, it's their job to say what they came to say and the way they came to say it. So he wasn't born under it. He just didn't grow up under a turnip truck. He knows what Scott Pelley is trying to get him to say and the point he's trying to get him to make. So he answered it in the way he chose. This is what they do. It is not my job as a journalist to say you lie, as we have saw happen on the floor of the House a couple years ago with the president. It is my job to explain to the listener what is the history of this person's comment, put it in context, and frankly, let the viewer make their own conclusion. The caller has made up his mind about Mitt Romney. He probably wouldn't believe anything he said if he said the sky was blue. So there's nothing that I can say by running around with my hair on fire, pointing the lying finger at someone, that would change that caller's mind about Mitt Romney. But there may be somebody else out there who wants to hear more and decide for themselves.
I like the imagery. People running around with their hair on fire, yelling pants on fire. George in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi there, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Listen, how come you guys are trying to demonize foreigners? He's foreign. You're siding with people who are silly. If he's foreign, he's foreign. What is the problem? It's like people who say, well, there's nothing wrong with being gay. Oh, I'm not gay. I mean, it's really the height of hypocrisy. I'll take my answer off the phone.
Well, he's not foreign is the only answer that I have. He's American.
I don't know what the other answer to the question would be. My parents were not born in this country. I don't demonize foreigners, but I think that if someone was not born here, it's just a fact of what the fact of the matter is.
Joweed in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Joweed.
Hello, good morning. I wanted to, I had a comment on the comments that John Sununu made in your interview a few minutes back.
Yes.
And I was struck by, at one point, he was very strong in his comment, saying that the people on the other side, I guess he meant the Democratic side, do not get the mindset of the entrepreneurs who are risking their capital, and of course that we have to provide them an incentive to risk that capital. But then right on the heels of that, he said that what if you take away that incentive, what would those people do? They would go to a boring 9-to-5 job. And to me, that was such a cynical outlook on the majority of Americans, what people are doing every day to put food on the table. 9-to-5 job in the view of the other side, the Sununu side, is a more, you know, less worth than the people who are risking their capital. To me, that was a very snide comment.
Joweed, thank you. We'll go to Shelley in Brooklyn next. Hi, Shelley, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. What really baffles me about this whole debate is that it seems to be framed as war on women versus focusing on the economics. They are one and the same. I mean, women are the most vulnerable economically, and some of the proposals that the Republicans have in their platform as their stated goals will affect all women disproportionately, so it's both a gender and an economic issue, and I hate to see this division. It's so wrong.
Shelley, thank you. So, Gwen Ifill, maybe segueing from Shelley, how do you see Ann Romney's job when she speaks in the 10 o'clock hour tonight at the convention?
It's to, first of all, I've heard her speak. She's a great speaker, a better speaker than her husband, in much the way that Michelle Obama was a better speaker than her husband 4 years ago. She is probably, you know, they always call the spouse the secret weapon, which is kind of demeaning, actually. It's kind of small. She's bigger than that. She's warm. She's funny. She is beloved in the room. And she's going to tell the story of the warm and fuzzy Mitt that most people, frankly, just don't see. He comes across in lots of respects as being kind of stiff and being kind of robotic almost, when in fact his family tells a story of what a great grandfather he is and all of that. They have 16 grandchildren, and when you see him with his grandchildren, he's a different man. So I think that her job is to bring and describe that different man on the floor. If they leave this convention this week in Tampa without having changed the fundamental worldview of who Mitt Romney is as a man, they will have failed. And they understand that they're going to talk about the economy, and they're going to talk about the president's failures. But they also know that in the end, someone's got to flick a lever for someone, not just against the other guy. And the part of the goal here is to make the case that the other guy is bad, but that this one is a better option. And if you look at the polls, the reason why they're neck and neck, given the economy, the president should be much farther behind. The reason why they're neck and neck is because people are trying to figure out who Mitt Romney is, and that's what her role is there tonight.
You know, we have a clarification with which to end this segment, and I think it's important because it was my lead angle in the billboard that we did before the 10 o'clock news previewing this segment, and when I brought up with you the clip from the CBS Romney interview last night on the health of the mother as well as the life of the mother that he would accept as an exception to an abortion ban. Well, it turns out we're now seeing that Romney's campaign is saying that he misspoke. According to a Romney spokesperson, Andrea Saul, as quoted in the Washington Post, Governor Romney's position is clear. He opposes abortion except for cases of rape, incest, and where the life of the mother is threatened. So when I thought he broke some new ideologically moderate ground there by saying health of the mother as well, it turns out he just misspoke, and that is not a Romney position.
Well, I like the way that they jumped on that so fast. That's interesting.
So, Gwen Ifill, we'll see you on television tonight on PBS doing convention coverage.
I'll be there with my pal Judy Woodruff for an hour for the news hour and four long hours all night, every night this week.
Hang in there. Thank you so much for coming on with Analysis.
Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll take a break from convention talk. Apple beat Samsung in sales and now in court. We'll see what it means for the future of your gadgets and innovation. Stay with us.